jump in the night. Your heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
Hello and welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is Friday, September 11th, 2026. And like we said on the episode Wednesday, we cannot believe 25 years have passed since the horrific terror attacks in New York, the Pentagon, and in Pennsylvania. And we hope wherever you are, if you were personally impacted by 9/11, if you were touched by it, loved ones, family members, first responders, that you are feeling the love of those that you've lost, that they're memory is stronger than ever, and that the sacrifice that so many gave is top of mind for all of us. And if you want to watch the 9/11 memorial ceremonies, it is streaming on the 9/11 memorial website, and then ABC Tonight also has some more coverage. So we're off this week. We're bringing you some of our Freaky Friday stories from years past, including the third story we've got in this lineup has a connection to 9/11 and an eerie pre-event connection that I think goes to show just what happened before as well as after the event. And then some other spooky stories and freaky encounters that you all have experienced. So thank you all for being here with us today. Don't forget to check out the newest episode that just dropped on Wednesday. We've got a all new interview with Brian Buckmeyer, the host of Burden of Proof, Luigi Mangione. You can also send in your stories for Freaky Friday. Send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday so you can hear your own story on an upcoming Freaky Friday. But in the meantime, we hope that you are taking care of yourself, holding your loved ones close, and that you will enjoy this lineup of odd but true tales sent in by you. So let's get freaky.
Yeah, let's make some freaky. I'm Christy. I'm
Heather. Hit her and get her and make some freaky. They're going to turn the show freaky. Off.
Well, this first one is from Gabriella, and it is called A North Texas Backroads Terror. Howdy, ladies. As everyone does, I want to start off by giving my love for your podcast. I grew up in North Texas and have been living in Nashville for almost 8 years now. So sometimes when I'm homesick, I find comfort in all y'all's anecdotes about the DFW. It is truly like listening to my close friends talk. Okay, so let's get into my story. I have been meaning to send this story in for about a month now, but after hearing the most recent Freaky Friday episode, the one with the East Texas Backroads story, I just knew it was time for me to sit down and write this one out. I grew up in a very small community about 30 minutes north of Fort Worth. In high school, I had a very tight-knit group of friends. We did everything together, and during summers, we all essentially lived with each other. It was a perfect way to spend my teen years, and luckily, I still keep in contact with these friends. However, our families are all very Southern Baptist, and we were not angels, so we often did a lot of sneaking around and getting up to no good, which, considering the fact that there was nothing entertaining to do without going into the city, this required a certain level of creativity. Something we did often was take late-night drives around the oil roads that connected to my friend's dad's cattle ranch. If you're not from Texas, oil roads are gravel roads that connect to oil wells owned within their respective companies. Oftentimes, these roads are out in the middle of nowhere, and they're easy to get lost on. I should add, these roads were usually locked with a gate, but of course we knew the lock combination. In other words, hardly anyone used these roads. There were three wells on this ranch, and the road seemingly stretched for miles and would spit us out into an area called Deep Creek. Deep Creek consisted of a rickety old bridge and a very old cemetery. It definitely had spooky legends, one of which involved a tale of a woman who was brutally scalped and murdered. You can still go to her grave today, which we commonly did, because we were freaks, yes, but also because everyone knew that the area was haunted and would go just to scare themselves. Well, one night, the summer after my senior year, we had stayed up late drinking in my friend's pool and decided to take our usual drive down the oil roads and blast our favorite music. So many unsafe things, I know. This night I remember so vividly. I was sitting in the passenger seat while my best friend Taylor was driving. Two other girls were in the back. We were singing, shouting, giggling, etc. We had that invincible feeling of being teenage girls who were about to take off on their separate college paths, enjoying the last of our summer. It was probably close to 1 a.m. at this time, and Taylor was about to get off the oil roads towards Deep Creek so we could turn around and head back home. Here's where things get weird. As Taylor started to turn, her headlights caught something moving towards us further down the road. Keep in mind, it is dark out there. No houses, no streetlights, nothing. Not even cell service. Of course, at first, we all think it to be a deer or a wild hog, whatever. We were used to seeing wildlife at night. But no, it was a man running towards our car. It was one of those moments where the car went from being filled with loud, girlish noise to being dead quiet as we all realized what we were seeing. Taylor slowed down for a split second until she put that Chevy Traverse in sports mode and floored it past the man. My knuckles were white from how tight my fists clenched in that moment. She drove fast for a few minutes until we turned onto a main road. No one had said anything until Taylor said, with her voice shaking, "Did you see what he was wearing?" I said, "He was wearing business clothes." I remember the hair standing straight up on my arms. Everyone in the car had at that point all started talking over each other about how weird it was. This was an adult male, dark hair, sprinting down this road, wearing slacks, a button-down, and dress shoes at 1 a.m. No other cars nearby, nothing. He didn't seem interested in us, didn't even seem to notice us as we sped past him. But he did have this look on his face. I still remember it. It was scared. We told my parents about it the next day, and of course they said it could have been a drug situation, which is an issue in this area. But something about the way the man was dressed always made the situation seem so much more sinister in my mind. Well, about a month ago, I was talking to my mom, and she said, "Did you hear they found a body at Deep Creek?" Foul play was suspected. I instantly thought of that man. Could it be that he was tied to this murder? Could he have been running from someone? Could he have been running from the scene of a crime? Had someone, maybe even him, been doing nefarious acts out there for years? I'll never know, but I think about it almost daily. I am attaching some photos of Deep Creek so you can get a visual for the isolation of the area and hopefully help aid in the spooky factor of the story. It's safe to say we never went back to this area after that night, but this memory from nearly 10 years ago still gets brought up when we reunite a few times a year.
I imagine that's the kind of memory that, yeah, you can't erase because it's fucking horrible.
So the pictures that Gabriella attached to you and I would look like, oh yeah, this is just the middle of Texas. It's just grass fields, dirt roads, like chain link fence, cemetery. It is very spooky. I think we're used to it. But being out there at night with no cars, if the man had been wearing something other than business clothes, I agree that it would have been less creepy.
Yeah.
But yes. There's no car. He's dressed like he came from work or is going to work and is running full speed ahead.
That's exactly why I think it's extra nightmarish because, I mean, it sounds like something out of a horror movie. Because you're right. If he's wearing jogging clothes, you're like, oh, he's out for a jog. Mm-hmm. If he's wearing jeans and, you know, a white T-shirt, it's dirty, coveralls. He's got a tractor or what you call it, a trucker hat on, dirt covered. Like, oh, he's out working or he's running from, his horse got loose. But you're yeah. like, oh, sir, I'm sorry. He's like, I have to go update my stock portfolio. And he just starts running through the forest. Yeah. Like, now? God.
You gotta ask yourself, is he running from something or towards something?
Right? It's like, is he running towards me or am I driving toward danger and he's running past me and I like that she put the Traverse in sport mode. She went fucking around.
Just like those Crocs.
Hell yeah.
You gotta put that little heel thing on and just floor it.
By the way, if I may have a brief Croc aside, several people, and God bless every single one of you, have sent us DMs of a video of a company that makes spurs for the back of your Crocs.
Oh, I have seen these.
I got to get them for the Texas Crocs I have.
Oh, yeah. You've got to.
Come on.
You got a whole Texas pair of themed Crocs. You've got those. You would be... It would be the biggest mistake of your life if you didn't get those.
Thank you. I'm on it. Thanks, everybody that sent them. I'll get them and I'll sell those pictures. But yeah, you got to get your Crocs in sport mode with your spurs, and then you can battle this guy. I mean, I would have drove off too. I mean, even though he looked scared, is it a ruse? Is it a way to lure you to stop you from driving off?
What are you going to do at 1 a.m. drunk as a bunch of high school girls in this situation?
Mm-mm. No.
Nothing helpful. You might get yourself in danger.
Yes.
So this is where you do the right thing. You drive off. Once you get cell service, you call the police, say, hey, this was going on.
Right.
Do you call the police? Because then maybe you get in trouble for being out on these roads that you got a combination to a lock and stuff. I don't know. There was no follow-up if the person found was in the body found was in business clothes or what, but I could see the connection there. A month later, it's my gut tells me y'all drove up on something.
Yeah, something was happening. And I think y'all all did the right thing of telling your parents, because you're like, we're teenagers. Like, we don't know here's information. And what do we do next? And you just sort of defer to the grownups in your life as best you can do. But yeah, he ain't out there at 1 a.m. picking flowers, you know.
If there was a car nearby, it would have made more sense. But if you didn't see a car and it's just a person out in the middle of nowhere, how'd they get there?
It ain't going to be good. No, never is. But thanks for sending us the pictures of the creek, because I'll put them on our Instagram story as well. Just imagining a man in a business cat or business wear running through that is...
I also have to say, this is the exact type of stuff that my friends and I did in high school. We did not have oil roads because we did live in Fort Worth. So I guess it's funny that Gabriella refers to it as the big city, which I guess compared to where the small town where you lived, it would have been. But we would drive to certain houses or stuff in the Metroplex that was known as being like haunted or spooky just to scare ourselves. Did you do that too? Is that just a thing kids do? I think it's normal to want to like get a thrill out of that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And it's a lot of like daring stuff. It wasn't so a little bit older grades than me. I think I talked about on the air. We had Motley Manor, Mansion, and you like dared each other to go up there. But we also had, and it's a true story and it's a heartbreaking story, a road right next to our school. I went to Horn High School, and there's a road called Holloman Road, or what you called Old Holloman Road. And in real life, the truth of the matter is a woman and her child were killed back there, I think, and it was a domestic violence. It was like her husband sent somebody. I'm not entirely familiar on the case. So there was an actual crime that occurred there in the late 1970s, I believe. And then from there, it became this like, oh, do you want to drive down Old Holloman Road? That's where the devil worshippers are. And I don't think it was, sadly. I think it was truly the site of a horrible crime. But then it got this negative reputation. And my friends and I did drive my friend Ryan's Jeep Liberty. It was a purple Jeep Liberty, and drove it down Old Holloman Road.
I dated a guy in high school that had a purple Jeep.
Fuck yeah.
I don't know if it was a Liberty, but purple.
It was a cool guy move, right? The purple Jeep.
No.
And we went driving down that road, and I know my friend Jeff was with me and my friend Matt, and we were just like out, you know, we weren't doing anything. We were just like, ooh, let's go to Old Holloman Road, and got far enough down there, and we came upon a mattress that was like just laid out there, and it wasn't like you could just toss it out like you were getting bulk trash. It was like someone had taken it down this old country road and placed it. And for whatever reason, maybe I screamed because I'm a huge baby and scaredy cat or what, but we all started screaming. It was like a cartoon. I was like, oh my God. And they're like, oh my God. So he pulls out and we speed and speed off we almost nearly wrecked his Jeep. And then that's the night that we went to the IHOP. And as we're sitting there, someone wrecked their car into the side of the IHOP.
Oh my God.
What a night. Stupid.
Wow. You went from what you thought was a scary situation to a really scary situation.
We're in a neutral zone. We're at the International House of Pancakes. They cannot get us here.
It's okay. International. It's like the UN. Everyone comes together.
The embassy. Mm-hmm. Well, they came. I don't know if it was related or if it was just somebody at 1 o'clock in the morning wrecking their car into the.
Well, you know, sometimes you don't want to finger bang on the dirt. So you go and throw a mattress out down there.
I will hook up with you on Old Holloman Road if I can get a Helix mattress out there. And they're like, Helix delivers. They put them in a box. They're wrapped up.
And then Helix is like, we got an order for 123 Old Holloman Road. It just has a mile marker. Should we just leave this on the side of the road?
You know what? That's customer service.
Well, and you can use code CREEPY for 20% off of that bad boy. So make sure you do that too.
Helix is like, please don't advertise us as being a backyard or backwoods fuck mattress. We're like, that was not at all sanctioned by anybody.
That was the best backwoods fuck of my life. My back doesn't hurt. Honestly. I felt cradled. It got hot at one point, but their cooling feature really kept me cool.
They're like, these reviews are weird. A lot of them are just about fucking outdoors. They all use the same promo code. Yeah, I bet you did. Thanks for supporting the show.
Anyways, they were a great sponsor. We hope that
they probably canceled. It's all right. Thanks,
well,
guys.
Well, thank you, Gabriella, for that.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. It's that time of year that it feels like your inbox is completely full, your calendar is getting full, everybody's schedules are colliding with one another, and it seems like chaos reigns. But you need something? When things get like this, it's time to find a way to come down a little smoother in the evenings because life is just coming at you fast. That is exactly why people have been enjoying a more modern way to casually decompress and how IndiCloud can make a difference. IndiCloud is a fully legal online cannabis dispensary for gummies, exotic flower, premium pre-rolls, zero sugar THC sodas, energy gummies, and extra strength sleep gummies. Everything is federally legal hemp THC, lab tested, shipped directly and discreetly to your door. Because the start of fall should still feel like something you get to enjoy, even when the calendar starts filling back up. When that breeze hits, you don't want to be face down in your desk, like stressing. At the end of the day, sometimes the day has to end. And when it's time to wind down, IndiCloud is who I reach for. That you got their energy gummies for the mornings that start before you feel ready, those THC sodas for turning down the volume after a full day, extra strength sleep gummies for making bedtime feel like a boundary, and flower or pre-rolls for a more intentional end of day ritual. Their pre-rolls are amazing. Everything from IndiCloud I've ever tried has been good, from the gummies, the candies, all the way to their pre-rolls, the Bob Saget, I cannot recommend enough, as well as the Pineapple Express. They also have all kinds of things, vapes, cartridges. Like I said, the gummies, their Soda Shop gummy collection is one that I love to just pop a Soda Shop gummy and then go if I'm going to enjoy a movie or just chill out and watch something on TV. I feel like it is a way for me to unwind when it feels like my calendar just won't quit. If you're 21 or older, go to IndiCloud.co, that's .co, not .com. Use code CREEPY for 30% off your first subscription order. Again, that's IndiCloud.co, code CREEPY. Your subscription ships regularly and discreetly with free gifts and free shipping on qualifying orders. Don't forget, when you order, fill out the quick survey to support this show. Enjoy responsibly, and a huge thanks to IndiCloud for helping everybody enjoy the return of routine without giving every new responsibility a star role. We're on this journey together. That's why we've all gathered here today. So thank you all for being here with us.
That and for our announcement that we talk like this in the year of 2024.
Thank you. And with that, we will begin our stories.
Oh, all the one-star reviews. They were doing fine, but then, I don't know, 2024 really took a downward spiral. Yeah. They started talking in this voice that I just hated.
I couldn't get into it. Every time they would say, like, I'm Christy and I'm Heather. Let's get into it. Everything sounds like a riddle.
That's what I love it. You keep people on their toes. You don't know what to expect.
Well, let's get into it.
Well, for the sake of everyone's sanity, we will just speak normally today.
Backing off of it.
Except for right now. Well, I'm Christy.
And I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. This is what happens when we record at 10 o'clock at night, which is not something we normally do.
It's a little wheels off in the evening, but you get the late night. This is normally reserved for the balcony. Yeah, this is Sinister Hood After Dark. This is normally reserved for just on the balcony for your neighbors.
Except I am fully sober.
Same, yeah. We're just goofy because it's late.
It is. Well, this first story we have is from Allie. We're starting off 2024 strong with this subject line. The time a vampire stole a bird and asked if he could take my picture.
This is the energy we're going into 2024 with, Allie. Thank you.
Hi, ladies. I obviously have to sing the obligatory praises for your podcast. I started listening after you were guests on National Park After Dark and was hooked after I had to pull over on a four-hour drive listening to Christy's In-N-Out story from laughing so hard I was crying. I want to thank you for the respectful and thoughtful way you cover cases and stories. You ladies were with me every mile while I spent 6 months training for a marathon and every step while I ran the race. You made going out for two-hour runs every day fun. It was like I had two friends encouraging me the whole time. When you started the Freaky Friday segment, I thought I didn't have a story to share. However, recent stories and a trip to my hometown have brought back memories that I had long suppressed. I grew up in a small Midwest farm town. I'm talking one stoplight total. When I was 15, I started working at one of the few restaurants in town. At the time, this was by far the nicest and most chic restaurant and bar we had. I was a hostess there from 15 all the way to when I graduated high school and went off to college. I absolutely loved working there and cherished that time. The restaurant had two sides, the dining side and the tavern side, split right down the middle. The dining side had low top tables and the open concept kitchen, and the tavern side had high top tables, a lounge area, and the impressive bar. The layout of the restaurant is important to the story, I promise. Both were long and rectangular sides, connected at the front by an arched doorway. When you walk in the front door, you're immediately at the host stand on the dining side. If you go left, you go through the arch door and into the tavern side. From the host stand, you can see the lounge area with a few cozy leather chairs and a fireplace. Okay, now that we have this covered, I can talk about Vampire. I met Vampire shortly after I started working there at the age of 15. I couldn't drive yet, so I had to be driven to work by my parents. I normally only worked Friday and Saturday nights, and brunch on Sunday mornings. While driving out and about, we would occasionally see a tall, slender man walking through the town wearing an oversized leather coat. He was bald and pale, and probably in his mid-30s. I never thought much of it until he came into the restaurant one day. It was a Sunday after the brunch rush. There weren't many people left in the place. He asked if he could sit in the lounge area, to which I replied yes. He went over, sat in the chair that faced the host stand, ordered a cup of decaf, and just sat for hours. I would occasionally catch him staring at me, and I felt uncomfortable. But since I was 15, I had no idea what to do. Over the next few months, he would come in, only when it wasn't busy, and sit. Always paid in cash. He would start to get more bold with staring, not just at me, but the other waitresses as well. I eventually would move the host stand out of the doorway when he would sit in the lounge so that I wasn't in his eyesight. He would adjust the chair every time so that I was. Then things started to get really weird. He started giving his favorite waitress love notes. I can't recall exactly what they said, but he would sit in the lounge and write in a small notebook and then leave the notes after he left. They said something along the lines of, "I feel my heart flutter when our eyes meet. Our forbidden love will one day flourish." Something like that. Everyone was uncomfortable with him in the restaurant and would be on edge whenever they had to serve him. One morning, I was outside sweeping off the sidewalk when I noticed a dead bird. I notified one of the busboys so that he could take care of it because there was no way I was touching that. He said he would take care of it in a bit, and that was that. Shortly after we opened, I see Vampire walk by the large front windows. He paced a few times in front of the restaurant, looking in to see if we were busy. I then see him stop, look down at where I had seen the dead bird, and pause. He then walked in and quietly asked if he could use the bathroom. I nodded and he walked to the bathrooms. A few minutes later, he walked back outside, a few paper towels stuffed in his leather jacket. My mouth dropped as I saw him bend down near the dead bird, pick it up, and put it in his pocket. He then walked away and I didn't see him again that day. What? What was he doing with that? I walked outside after he left and sure enough, the bird was gone. I was dumbfounded. It is worth noting that Vampire had a friend that would occasionally come in with him. His friend was shaggy-haired and slightly unkempt. One time, his friend came in, asked to use the bathroom, and walked out with wet hair. Yep, he washed his hair in our bathroom sink. It is worth saying that we did not have any sort of unhoused population in our town, ever. It was too small and rural. Anyway, what was I going to do at 15 years old? Tell him no, he can't use the bathroom? I always got a weird and uneasy vibe from these two. The looks they would give us, the hushed way they would lean over and chat with each other, still gives me goosebumps over a decade later. As if it couldn't get any weirder, here we go. One time, Vampire and his friend came in. Instead of asking to sit in the lounge like they normally did, they asked to sit at a table. But not just any table. The worst table in the restaurant. It was near the back on the dining side, up against a wall, right next to the kitchen and the server expo area. Every employee had to walk past this table to take dishes back, get food, ring in something, etc. So it was not an ideal spot. So when they asked to sit there, when the restaurant was almost empty, I got a weird feeling. I sat them and let the server deal with them. Part of my job as a hostess was to bus tables and reset them, so I had to walk by that table a lot. Every time I did, they stared, and then they would whisper. I was so uncomfortable, but I knew I had to keep doing my job. So I did. I was standing at the host stand, which was in front of this table, sorting out the reservations for later, when Vampire approached me from behind and asked if I could come to their table because they had a question. I shakily obliged. This was the first time he had ever interacted with me like that. I walked over and they both stared at me. I hoped they had a question about the menu, even though they never ordered food. Vampire spoke up while his friend looked at me. So, my friend here is an artist, and he took one look at you and thought you were so beautiful and insisted that he take a photo of you so he can draw you. We will send you a copy when it's done. You're just so beautiful. I stood there, dumbfounded. I had no idea what to say. He continued, "We can pay you $20 for it, too. Please, just let him take a photo of you." I wanted to say no so badly, but was afraid and I clammed up. Thankfully, just then, my manager, who was a total mama bear, called me over to the kitchen, saying she needed something. I excused myself without giving an answer and went over to her. She didn't need anything. She was rescuing me from this encounter. She told me to go call my dad for a ride and to go home, and to wait in the office until he got there. I went in her office and cried. Looking back at the time, I truly did think that he wanted to just draw me. Now, I can think of a few things he would do with that picture, and none of them are innocent. I never saw him again after that in the restaurant. I think that was enough finally for the manager to ask them to leave and never come back. I would see him walking around town every so often, and then after that, never saw him or his friend again. I truly hope they got the mental help they clearly needed. But I still get the heebie-jeebies whenever I go home and go to my favorite restaurant and see those chairs. Thank you, ladies, for all that you do, and thank you for taking the time to read this story. Since then, I've learned many lessons, and one is that it's okay to be rude. It may end up helping you out in the end. Keep it rude and keep it creepy. Love, Allie.
Wow. There is a lot of, I feel a lot of relation to this story of like having been young, working in restaurants, people saying things or talking to you that way and having like a mama bear manager be like, no, like I'm stepping in. It's one thing if you want to sit over there and be weird and drink coffee, but you are not going to proposition. Yeah, first of all, come on now. But he's like, I can't get too jacked if I'm going to sit here and drink, you know, drink it all day. You know, he might have a, you know, give you heart palpitations or something.
Well, he knows he's got to be up all night because, you know, that's when he hunts. So I'm surprised he was out in the daytime given his, should have been home in his coffin.
He's like, I should be sleeping now.
I know exactly what this feels like, Allie, that feeling of I'm young. This is an adult. I'm at work. So there's that power imbalance of like, well, even though I'm uncomfortable, like
it's a customer.
Rude. Yeah, it's a customer. The customer's always right. I can't say anything. Like, whatever. I'm probably making a big deal out of it. Mama Bear, bless you. And I think hopefully now we're in an era where it would be way less likely for a 15-year-old to take this, but also that many other people would be looking around going, nah, we're not playing this today, vampire. Get up. Get out of here. Go back to your cave. We're not doing this. Right.
You'll fly away in bat form. Get out of here. But yeah, you're right. I think so. Even just like the staring at a young girl, you know, even any type of plausible deniability, picking up the bird, I have no explanation for that other than some people are just, maybe he needed to suck on the blood. I don't know.
Or but, he was gonna bury it, or I mean,
don't touch a dead bird.
None of all of, give it if that was the only thing he'd done, okay. But given the rest of it, nah,
yeah, no, I don't think we would any of us would abide just some guy in a long leather duster staring at our 15-year-old hostess. So, I'm glad that you had that manager, Allie, and thank you for letting us be in your ears and help you train for that marathon. Congratulations on that, and we're glad that we could be there in your ears because I'm not going to run a marathon, but good for you for doing it.
Yeah, I like that we got taken on a marathon because that's the only time I'll run one. So I appreciate that we got – I felt like I was there in spirit.
Yes, thank you and congratulations.
Yeah, for sure. That's no easy feat. So thank you so much for sending that in. And vampire, wherever you are,
watch out.
We see you.
Yeah, we're on the hunt.
You don't see yourself in the reflection of that mirror, but we see you.
You can't see you, but we see you. We're on your ass. Sinister Hood will be right back. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. If you've ever owned a pet, you know they run on their own logic. Jump first, think later, ask questions, never. It's part of what makes them so lovable, but it's also how you end up with those surprise vet visits you didn't see coming. ASPCA Pet Health Insurance helps cover eligible vet expenses, so when those moments happen, you can focus on getting them the care they need without overthinking the cost or second-guessing your decision. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans that fit your budget, your lifestyle, and even your pet's particular quirks. Because let's be honest, vet bills can add up fast. ASPCA Pet Health Insurance has been around for almost 30 years and has covered over 1 million pets. And when it's time to submit a claim, it's easy. Just use their app and receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account so you can get back to focusing on what really matters, your pet. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/creepy. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Well, this next one is from Courtney and similar vibes, but not the same. You know, it's the umbrella of terrorism, I suppose.
Yes. Also San Diego.
True. Yeah. This is called Terrorists Lived in My Neighborhood. Hi, you guys. Not sure if you remember me, but I was a very nervous and excited redhead asking questions at the San Diego show. I said I would submit this story. I know your San Diego show was forever ago, but I tend to procrastinate. Before I begin, I just want to say thank you for coming to San Diego. My wife and I were so excited to see you in person, and doing VIP was a surprise for her that she still does not stop talking about. Your podcast continues to be on every trip we take up to the mountains to volunteer. We also recently went to Mission Beach and now can't help but think of your questionable nighttime visit there. Anyway, on to the story. I was born and raised in San Diego, and growing up there, I've run into some small brushes with true crime. One example is someone related to, or close to, Scott Peterson lived down the hill from my house. I was a little kid, but I still remember the news being outside the house for weeks as the case unraveled. However, little did I know, there were even more notorious individuals living only a few blocks from my house. My elementary school was not far, and there were these apartments right across from it. One of my dad's friends happened to live there, and she sometimes would come over for dinner after work. Well, one dinner, she was talking about how these new people moved in, and their apartment was strange. There wasn't much furniture, just a couch, a TV, and what looked to be a gaming console. We didn't think much of it. I mean, maybe they just couldn't afford more furniture or didn't spend a lot of time there. Who knows? Well, on September 11th, 2001, we woke up ready to go to school. And as you know, the first plane hit the first tower. My brothers have a different dad, and their dad called my mom saying, "Keep the kids home." At the time, he was in a type of intelligence-centered police department, obviously not Homeland Security because it didn't exist yet. But he had access to lots of information. Either he knew something or recognized signs of a terrorist attack. I don't talk to him, so I have no idea. Even if he didn't call, we probably still wouldn't have gone to school. Like you always hear, the world stood still. We joined the country in putting up our flags and lighting candles in remembrance of the victims over the next week. However, down the hill, only a few blocks from us, the U.S. government was raiding those apartments across from my elementary school. Two of the hijackers lived in those apartments, same apartment my dad's friend had mentioned to us over dinner. As kids, I didn't really know any of this was happening. I learned all of this when I got older because my best friend's mom was a teacher at our elementary school and thought we were eventually old enough to know. According to her, there was FBI at our school for months, watching the apartments and the mosque that was on the opposite side of our school. I believe the hijackers attended the mosque, but I'm not sure. Regardless, the mosque felt the pressure to put up an American flag in hopes of alleviating the Islamophobia that surged at the time. The community of that mosque was hurting with all of us, but people were so ignorant and didn't recognize that. Anyway, apparently a few FBI agents were undercover at my school as custodians or even subs. After time passed, and I guess the area was cleared, they removed the agents and moved on. I still pass those apartments every time I visit my parents and always think how we had some of the most notorious terrorists living in our neighborhood, and no one had a clue. Sorry if the story was a little all over the place. I was about 6 years old when all this happened, and obviously a lot of information came to me as I got older. Thanks for reading, and thank you for giving so many people a place to share their creepy and weird but true stories. Hopefully, I will stop procrastinating and write my paranormal stories in for next time. Keep it creepy.
Well, thanks for coming to the show, and thanks for asking us questions afterwards. This is wild. You don't know your neighbors.
I remember this happening. I remember them raiding apartments there, mm-hmm. and I believe also in Florida.
Florida, yeah.
Where
flight training happened.
They had been living. Yeah. And isn't it so fucking eerie and terrifying that they're living there and they know what they're going to do and they're just playing Xbox because you got to do something to pass the time before you fly a plane into a building because that's how your life's ending in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and it's crazy if you just do a brief Google search on the hijackers that were found in, you know, that were traced back to San Diego, like they're the two that hit the Pentagon is the thinking, but that in one of the PBS stations did a report and they the FBI came in afterwards and were talking to people that knew the hijackers. They said some of them
the witnesses said, yeah, they were really quiet guys. They stayed to themselves. They were super conservatively religious. And then others were like, they were also regulars at this exotic dancer club. And one of them fell in love with the dancer and decided he was going to marry her. And then that got squashed by a religious advisor that they were talking to and stuff. So now you're like involved. I mean, this is a whole, they're living these whole lives.
Yeah.
Like you said, knowing that they have a date certain by which they're not only going to kill themselves, but thousands of others.
Yeah. Unless maybe love gets in the way. Maybe that's why they were like, you're getting out of this relationship. You've got a mission and it doesn't include a stripper.
She could have saved the world. And that guy stepped in, who is also, it turns out, a terrorist. And I believe is the head of Al-Qaeda he left San Diego afterwards and now runs Al-Qaeda. And at least as of, you know, a couple years ago, was one of the most wanted fugitives. But God.
It's wild. It's wild that you had undercover FBI agents at your school, too. Because I'm also like,
the new PE teacher.
If they were there beforehand, why didn't they pick him up beforehand?
Yeah, it's my understanding, and we always joke, not say jokingly say, but I think the now 20 over 20 years later, it's like the government let this happen. We talked about it in the NSA episode, right? Is that we had data and information that was not being analyzed, wasn't being focused on, and the FBI was just really interested in drug trafficking at the time and was not putting resources in place. I don't know that the FBI people were there before the attack. I think they came in afterwards to try to investigate. Maybe they did, and they just weren't doing a good job. But the argument is, absent plans that show what they're doing, or they've written it, or they've said it to someone, they were just living their lives. Just because they go to church, they're going to this mosque. They go home, they go to work, they go pray. That's pretty much all they're doing. Secretly, we know they were planning this dastardly thing, but like, unless you're tapping their phones and they're saying what they're going to do, you really don't have probable cause to take them in.
Yeah, I don't know. She says, according to her teacher, the FBI was at the school for months watching the apartments and the mosque, which if you're watching it afterwards, yeah, I guess perhaps the bad guys have already left. If you were watching it beforehand, then that's on you, because if you knew enough to like set up shop there, and it comes out after, you weren't wrong, they were living there, then there seems to be a disconnect. So
yeah, it was pretty badly handled on both sides.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you know, our government was definitely involved. So there's always that. But
aspect of it.
Knowing that, these people were just living amongst us for so long. Maybe right next door to you. You may have had an encounter with them. Who knows? You may have prayed next to them. And then you find out that they were only there for this is very, very eerie.
No, it definitely is. And just that idea that maybe then there's FBI agents at your school that you're like, I thought that was the janitor.
Yeah. And also, can just anybody be a substitute teacher? I thought you had to like have some kind of credentials to do that. And it's not being an FBI agent.
Yeah, I was going to say a college degree and a background check. But they're like, and what's your background? And they're like, don't worry about
forensics.
Reading.
You're like, they're 6 years old. I don't know if they're ready for forensics yet.
They're like interrogation techniques and profiling.
Well, you can never be too young to learn that, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, what a wild story. Sinisterhood will be right back. Well, I have an air conditioner and it's running and I pay the bills for it and it still only gets my house to a certain degrees at night and I just need it cooler. And the thing about it is sometimes no amount of air conditioning, fans, whatever is going to help. You have got to have that cool sheet comforter system that when you slip into it, you are not overcome with horrific sensory feeling, which is like just sweating, things sticking to your body. Just there's no way I can sleep when I am feeling like that. I've got to have a nice, cool, like an igloo, like a very cool freezing, like a nice cold. And the thing about Boll & Branch, their summer bedding options are breathable, lightweight, and designed to keep you cool all night long. Plus their organic cotton, 100% organic cotton, woven especially for airflow, not just for their softness. I've got their sheets. I've got their dream comforter. And I tell you what, it is a dream in my life. I just think if I got to sleep in another bed that's not mine, I get a dread in my gut because it's not what I'm used to. The Bolin Branch, it's wonderful. It will ruin you for every other sheet because 94% of Bolin Branch customers say their sheets get softer with every wash. So that's just it. You're going to get these sheets. You're going to keep using them. You're going to keep loving them more and more. And I tell you what, there's nothing like slipping into a nice, cool bed. And I say to my air conditioner, try harder. And while you're not doing what I need you to do, Bolin Branch has got my back. Quite literally, it keeps my back very cool. Upgrade your sleep with Bolin Branch. Get 15% off your first order plus free shipping at bolinbranch.com/creepy with code creepy. That's Bolin Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com/creepy, code creepy to unlock 15% off. Exclusions apply. This next one is from Tori, and the subject line is, My Psychic Awakening and Ghosts in Salem. Hi, Christy and Heather. I'm a longtime listener of Sinisterhood, but this is my first time writing into the podcast. I love the unique perspectives that each of you bring to your stories. I also particularly enjoy Heather's insights as a lawyer when it comes to breaking down true crime stories. My little Virgo heart adores it. My name is Tori, and since I was young, I can remember picking up on feelings of people and places. My mother always said that I'm an old soul because I would be the two-year-old who would gravitate to the old ladies at parties or functions to hear their stories and reply in full sentences. The old ladies loved it. I was also the kid who loved to read about Greek mythology, Egyptology, and kid-friendly books about vampires, witches, and werewolves. As I got older, I became more aware of my ability to feel the energies of people and places. It was hard sometimes to communicate that I didn't like someone because I just didn't like their energy. Good luck trying to explain that as a preteen to your logic-based, if I can't see it, I don't believe it, police officer of a dad. So, for a time, I began to ignore these abilities. If I felt something or saw something out of the corner of my eye, I ignored it. I've always loved paranormal shows, but would see the psychics and mediums on the shows and think, that's not me. I don't have those abilities. Fast forward to when I was about 23 and finally ready to ditch the glasses I had worn since middle school and get LASIK. I went to all the appointments, with my mom, of course, because I had to be dilated at each one. I have a high prescription, so the surgeons wanted me to get one last check with a retinal specialist. I'll save you all the details, but suffice it to say that I had emergency surgery the day after the appointment with a specialist for retinal detachment in my left eye. Had this not been caught in time, I would have woken up in approximately a month blind in my left eye. This is how retinal detachments are usually found. It was not the norm for them to happen to someone as young as myself and to be caught prior to loss of vision. Needless to say, this was too much of a coincidence for me that this was one, caught in time, and two, my vision was preserved, and three, it all happened by a surgeon saying they, quote, just want to be certain before proceeding. I spiraled hardcore into all things metaphysical and became a mainstay at my local metaphysical shop. From there, I began taking some psychic development courses, and as of 2022, began offering readings to customers myself. I started out with oracle and tarot cards on something I call spirit writing. Spirit writing is something I created myself because I began noticing that during readings for myself as well as for friends and family, I could hear words as an inner voice in my head. Thinking there was something wrong with me, I immediately contacted a mentor of mine who is a psychic and a medium to ask for guidance. She asked me some questions about this experience, and we determined that I should explore this ability further. From this, spirit writing was born. In a spirit writing session, I will ask the person sitting for the reading, my client, if they have a particular question. If they do, I'll write this question down at the top of a sheet of paper. If they don't have a question, I will write, quote, what do I need to know? After setting our intentions, I will tune in, as I call it. With this, I connect to what I consider to be the divine slash universe slash God slash goddess slash spirit guide slash angels, etc., whatever my client wants to call it. And I will listen to the inner voice and begin to write down what I hear. During this time, I've used words that I don't typically use in my vocabulary. I'll write down words of encouragement when I don't know that someone has gone through the loss of a job or is looking to change careers, etc. Words will also come through as a collective we. For example, we are always with you is a common statement. I can't explain how I do this other than it's a psychic ability, but I thought that was it. I thought my spiritual gifts would consist of card readings and written messages. Boy, was I wrong. Those things out of the corner of my eye that I mentioned ignoring as I grew into my preteen and teenage years, well, they were back, and I began to sense more and more during my readings. I would see images in my mind's eye. I would see symbols, objects, and people. I even started getting names sometimes. I had the thought that they could be loved ones who had passed on, but was in denial. I'm not a medium, I told myself. I didn't see my dead great-grandma at the foot of my bed as a four-year-old. There's no way I'm seeing those things now. I took the leap of faith when I got several nudges from friends to begin offering mediumship readings when asked at the shop I read at a couple times a month. I still had in the back of my mind, though, that I'm not as good as the other mediums out there. A trip to Salem for my 30th birthday changed that. As a fan of all things paranormal, of course I had Salem on my bucket list. So for my 30th birthday, I requested that for our mother-daughter trip of the year, I wanted to go to Salem with my mom. My mom's always been supportive of me, and I can always count on her to go on spooky adventures with me. Love you, Mom. I booked us a 3-bedroom Airbnb townhome near the harbor in Salem, built in the early 1800s for the week. My mom can also sense energies in spaces, but that's about the extent to which she's willing to explore her abilities. The moment we stepped into our rental unit, I could sense that there was something there, but I didn't want to freak out my mom, so I kept quiet. Sometimes spirits are simply there to observe and nothing more. There were 2 bedrooms on the main floor, and the owner's suite was upstairs. My mom took 1 step into the owner's bedroom and said, "Nope, you can have this one," and turned around. There was a doorway in the room, which opened into a walk-in closet, and through that, you could then make it into the bathroom. I walked into this room and immediately knew something was hanging out in the closet. I'm of the opinion that most spirits are just hanging out and doing their own thing, so I take a "you don't fuck with me, I don't fuck with you" approach. I also protect my energy during my readings and can do the same at any time. So I took the owner's suite because it had the connected bathroom. That first night, I kept getting the mental image of a tall man in shadow standing in the closet doorway. He didn't do anything other than stand there. He didn't approach the bed, nothing moved, etc. So I set up my usual protections, called in my spirit guides to safeguard the space, and went to sleep. The man would do the same routine almost every night I was there. The next morning, I got up and walked downstairs. My mom saw me and said, "I need you to go into my room and tell me what the hell is in there right now." Having not told her anything, so I didn't freak her out, I asked, "What happened?" She then proceeded to tell me that she experienced what felt like small hands shaking her bed, and she woke up with her foot outside of the covers. Now, I have to explain that my mom never uncovers her feet at night. She grew up in an old farmhouse that everyone was convinced was haunted, and my mom slept with the covers over her head and completely cocooned by her sheets. To this day, she never sleeps with her feet uncovered. In response to this, I went into her bedroom and tuned in. I immediately saw a young girl in a nightgown and bonnet, about 8 to 10 years old. She said her name was Abigail, and she liked my mom because she had a nice maternal energy. After explaining to my mom that it was just a young girl excited to have someone around her who could interact with her, she calmed down. After speaking with Abigail, though, more information started coming through. I got the sense that Abigail had died from an illness, which was not uncommon in the time period of clothing I was seeing her in, 1800s to early 1900s. In the kitchen, I then saw a woman dressed in black with her hair in a tight bun and her head bowed. She told me that she was Abigail's mother and she was still playing hostess, making sure that everything was taken care of and that the guests were happy. I got the sense that Abigail passed first of the illness and the mother was in mourning before she too passed. The mother couldn't have been older than 35 or 40. It was then that I picked up on the man again. This time, he was not in shadow. He was an older gentleman, dressed in overalls and work boots, and he did have silver hair. I got the sense that this was Abigail's father, but that he had died at a later time than his wife and daughter. Based on this clothing, I believe he was a laborer of some sort, possibly working at the docks we were close to. After relaying all this information to my mom, she was a lot less freaked out and even spoke aloud to Abigail on occasion. We learned to coexist with our ghostly host, but not without learning some of their rules first. As someone with high lens prescription, I'm talking negative 12 and negative 13 Coke bottle glasses, I sleep with a nightlight so that if I need to get out of bed, I can at least see the shadows of furniture so that I don't slam my foot into anything. In the owner's suite, I turned on the bathroom light and cracked the door whenever I went to sleep. The morning after our first night there, after telling my mom about the ghosts, I was in the bathroom brushing my hair, putting on makeup, and getting ready for the day. As I turned to leave the bathroom, the door slowly closed. Now, I'm always a logical person first, so I tried to recreate the phenomenon. I opened the bathroom door again and tried multiple combinations of turning and walking to try to get it to close again. Nothing. I explained aloud to whomever was listening that I have a strong prescription and needed to have the bathroom light on when I slept so that I could see. I just felt the message behind the action was close the door. The door closing by itself never happened again while we stayed there. Another instance of activity was the dryer door, swinging open when Mom and I were getting ready to leave for the day. I can't recall which day it was, but my mom and I were running a load of laundry through the washer and dryer before going out for the day. We got the laundry into the dryer, ran the cycle, and decided we would reheat and fold it all once we got back. Abigail's mom did not seem to like this. As I walked out of the bedroom door across from the closet where the laundry machines were, I saw the dryer door, which was only cracked, not latch, swing outwards to open. I immediately began speaking aloud to anyone listening that we were going out for the day and I planned to fold and put away the laundry later. My mom caught me talking to the air at the top of the steps and asked, "What are you doing?" So I had to explain to her what happened. Go mom for just saying, "Okay," and accepting what I saw and felt. Circling back now to Abigail's father hanging out in the owner's suite closet. Remember when I said I thought he could have worked at the docks? Well, I got the mental image of items being exchanged in a low-lit room, and it didn't give me a good feeling. I don't know if there was some illegal smuggling or other activities to make ends meet, but I felt that Abigail's dad had a hand in something and was now afraid of judgment after his death. I got the sense that Abigail and her mother stuck around after their deaths to wait on the father to pass so they could all move on together. The father's fear of judgment is keeping him from moving on, and subsequently, Abigail and her mother are sticking around as well and refuse. I don't believe in forcing spirits to move on that are not being malicious, and this family just seems to be hanging around together in their home. I was going to break that up if no harm was being done. I spoke aloud and told Abigail's father that I did not believe in forcibly moving anyone on who was not causing harm. I told them that they were not stuck in this place, that they could move on into the light at any time, and there would be no judgment. It's my belief and experience that loved ones are on the other side to greet us when we cross over. Once I said these words aloud, the feeling of being watched in the bedroom was gone. That night, I did not experience Abigail's father looming in the closet doorway watching me. I don't know if he saw me as a threat to his family and was keeping an eye on me, or just trying to intimidate me. However, I wish he would have let me know this issue sooner so I could have addressed it. It was at that point that I desperately wished that I could find some documentation or record of Abigail and her mother and father's existence. Unfortunately, my Google searching came up empty. All I can say is what I felt and perceived from these energies. When we packed up to leave, I felt that Abigail was sad to see us go. I guess not many guests interact with her and her family or even perceive that they're there. I told Abigail she had to stay here with her family and she was not permitted to follow us home. I also promised we would come back and visit again when we could. I'm sharing my story not just as entertainment, because that's probably the best story that I have, but also to let those out there wanting to explore their psychic abilities know not to give up. Your journey will not look like the TV shows, and that's okay. It's okay if you didn't have these abilities when you were a baby. We all grow at our own pace. And if your abilities manifest in ways you haven't seen examples of, don't be afraid to try something new. Keep it creepy, Tori.
Wow, Tori. Well, I think that's a great advice there at the end of, I don't know how people learn that they have these abilities other than maybe it starts as a kid and then you hone it in this type of way. But really the only things you see are these like glamorized, like the Long Island Medium and all these, you know, like over the top characters. But I think mostly it's just like regular people that can, you know, tune into something. They're a little more in tune with stuff than others are.
Yeah. And it's one thing if you want to like tap into your ability and like use it to like give readings to people or whatever. But you're right. We often see it on TV as kind of like this polished, shiny, they're charging tickets and made into this like big thing. And I think more often it's more like what Tori experiences, where it is almost like a shared meditative experience where it's like we're going to get really quiet and listen and like connect in a way that our molecules can exchange and our energies can exchange in whatever way that is. So I think it's beautiful, Tori, that you leaned into that despite the fact that's scary to be able to see shit, see entities, hear words, hear people talking, whatever, you know, not to be afraid of it, but like saying, this is how I'm going to protect my own energy, how I'm going to do it and how I can work with other people and hopefully give them messages or, you know, give them some comfort or whatever. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I love that. It also makes me want to, I want to take some classes. I want to do something. I get feelings. I don't hear things out loud. I've never like really heard that, but I'll like random words and thoughts or images will pop into my head. And usually I'm just chalk it up to generalized anxiety disorder. But what if this whole time I'm really psychic? Wouldn't that be a fun twist?
I mean, it could be.
We figured it out.
We got to get some books or something. I told you back in law school and I was Googling how to tell if you're psychic. And my friend's like, what are you Googling? I'm like, this class is boring. I think we should have known back then. I should have known if I was Googling that during an administrative law class that I was like, not into it. But jokes on all of us. Chevron doesn't exist anymore. So I was right to Google my psychic abilities. If I really was psychic, I would have told them this whole class is worthless because in 5 years, all of this case law is going to go away. But thank you so much, Tori. That's the magic of Salem, baby. There's something about, much like Maine, there's some good feelings up in
there. There in the north, with northeast, some shit's going down up there. But when we went to Salem, had a blast, would love to go back, would love to get a different reading from people that we have had referred to us as very well regarded mediums in the area. So and plus it was just such a cool place. The weather, everything, it was just, I could live there.
Well, yeah, let's go back.
Definitely. I could definitely live there. 100%.
Oh, right up against the water, too. Man, it's gorgeous. Well, thank you, Tori. We appreciate you. Sinisterhood will be right back. I think it's no secret that I'm trying to live to the year 2100. And part of that means I've got to increase the muscles that I have, build more muscles on top of that. I got to stay strong, keep my balance as I'm about to hit 40 this year. So I want to make sure that my core is strong so that I maintain balance, that I can get up off the floor easily. Really, I'm not like trying to be a bodybuilder. I'm literally just trying to be a functional adult. And the thing about it is I cannot have a trainer with me in my house on demand at any point. But Ladder is the closest thing I have found. You get a new plan every week from a real coach. It talks you through every rep. And what we love about Ladder is that it's an actual plan, not just a library of random workouts you scroll through and forget about. Every week, you get a new plan that builds on the last one. So your training is always moving forward through structured blocks. And like I said, it's like having a personal trainer right in your headphones. You get that in-ear coaching to walk you through every set with form reminders, cues, motivation. And the app even remembers your weights and reps automatically, so you can see yourself getting stronger over time. And the variety they've got is real, whether you're into Pilates, bodybuilding, kettlebells, glute focus program, at home dumbbell workouts, there is a plan for you. And whether you train at home or at the gym, there's also a group chat with your actual coach who answers questions, and the community keeps you accountable in a way that feels genuine. Oh, and Ladder now includes nutrition tracking at no extra cost, food logging, macro insights built right into your training plan, all of that for less than $1 a day. That is elite level personal training for a fraction of what you would pay for a single session with a trainer in person. Remove the guesswork with Ladder and get a real coach in your ear telling you exactly what to do for every workout. No thinking, everything planned for you. If you have an iPhone, head to ladder.fit/creepy and take a quick quiz to find your perfect Ladder plan. Use our link and get a free 7-day trial with no credit card and $10 off your first month if you join. Well, this next one is from Justin, and the subject line is Bridgewater Triangle Experience. Hi, y'all. I just finished listening to your excellent Bridgewater Triangle episode, and I wanted to share a bizarre encounter I had in the area. I was in senior year of high school and was driving around aimlessly with my girlfriend, my two buddies, and their girlfriends. It was around midnight when someone suggested that we head to Profile Rock in the Freetown Forest. Upon arriving, we parked in the small dirt parking lot next to the main trail system leading into the forest. When we all got out of the car, we immediately heard rhythmic drumming coming from deeper in the forest. The drumming was slow and ominous, almost ceremonial, and sounded like some sort of tribal drum. Next, we noticed lights in the forest. The lights were flame-like, small and round, similar to the flame that would sit atop of a tiki torch. There appeared to be a few dozen of these lights in different areas within the forest from what we could see. The girls were scared to death and immediately jumped back into the car. They wanted to get the hell out of there as fast as possible. However, curiosity got the better of my buddies and I, so we hiked into the woods to try and locate the source of the lights and drums. Mind you, it was pitch black, and we only had crappy cell phone lights to try and find our way. This was almost 20 years ago, so pre-flashlights on phone era. This is when things get even weirder. The lights did not appear to be on the main trail, but off the path amongst the trees and brush. The closer we got to the lights, the further away they seemed to be. It was bizarre. A light would appear to be about 15 yards away. You would walk roughly 15 yards towards it, but once you got there, you would be no closer to the actual light. I want to point out here that I'm familiar with fireflies, and these were definitely not that. After a while of chasing these lights and getting nowhere, mixed with the strange drumming that remained constant throughout the experience, we got pretty freaked out and ran back to the car and took off. Plus, our girlfriends were royally pissed off that we had left them. We never did find the source of the lights or the drums. It was only years later that I learned of the reports of ghost lights and ritualistic drumming in the triangle. I'm pretty skeptical of most ghost stories that I hear, but this was real, and six of us saw/heard it. P.S. We were dead sober.
Well, well, well. Mm-mm-mm. I would love to know if those girlfriends were still your girlfriends after that night.
You're like, we got back to the car and my now ex-girlfriend told me to drive her home. Right. You fucking left me.
Oh,
well, you're like,
dude,
we're just going to go check it out. That is, they taught us that at Randy and Scream. Isn't that his name? When he's like, don't ever say I'll be right back.
Yeah.
In a scary
yeah.
situation. Yeah. No, don't do it.
Especially in a forest at night. I mean,
yes.
No drums, no lights. That's dicey to walk into. But then you add who or what is causing this? And I'm going to go find him. What are you going to do when you find him?
Oh, the high school senior mentality of like, we got this.
I probably would have done the same thing, honestly. I would have gone looking for it too.
100% my friends and I would have done this. There was like a haunted road in our town, and we're like, let's go drive on Old Holloman Road and find the devil worshiper. So
we would do that too.
I joke, but at that point, we did not have like drumming sounds or lights. It was just an empty old dark road. So it's one thing to even just traipse off into an empty dark forest, but to be like, I don't know, I think there's people in there. Let's go find them. Like, they're trying to have a ceremony. Leave them
right?
alone.
I know. I think when I see lights in a forest, like flames,
yeah,
a company that my first thought is nothing good. I'll tell you that. Some images come to my head that I don't like. And then the drumming, yeah, something's going on. I'm like, I'm going to stumble into a clearing of this forest where some shit's going on this is probably the last thing I see.
No, somebody's finna get sacrificed and it's not about to be me. So I'm going to go back to the car. So your girlfriends were right. They did the right thing. But if you're out to do it for the story, you nailed it because you got a great story out of it. Because you are not alone. Book after book after book, or that Bridgewater Triangle documentary that we referenced in the episode. There's so many repeated reports of these like ghost lights, things flying, moving, and exactly what you said, where you get close to it and it keeps on moving, it keeps on moving back. So now that we've both been looking into more alien UAP stuff or whatever, orbs are commonly reported as parts of UAP. So I'm always like, what's the like overlap? Is it just a coincidence that we have ghost lights and then UAP orbs, or is it something happening? I don't know, both places.
I don't know. I was watching Simon on the baby monitor in the other night and saw what I thought was an orb in the bed with him. And I just took a screenshot and sent it to Tommy. I was like, does he have a toy with a light on in there with him? Because he put him to bed. Or is this an orb? And Tommy was like, I guess it's an orb because he didn't have any toys in there. So we very quickly came to the conclusion that an orb was in there. I still didn't go in, though. I checked a few minutes later and it was gone. So it seemed to have left.
It was a friendly orb, just checking things out. Now, if Simon comes and goes, those drums were keeping me up all night. That's when you need to worry about it.
No,
you're fine for now.
Oh,
man. Well, thank you for sharing that. I love firsthand accounts of places we cover. So thanks, Justin.
Yeah, and we got to go check this place out.
I know. I'm going to go traipsing through the woods. Sinisterhood will be right back. Helix Sleep is a premium mattress brand that provides tailored mattresses based on your unique sleep preferences. I was incredibly grateful to be able to spend Labor Day weekend at the lake with my nieces, my family. We rented a lovely house. And I tell you what, it's a lovely house. Nice to have, you know, a cute view, a fun kitchen table. And the bed was not a Helix. I'll tell you what, it was not a Helix mattress. And I love my family. I loved our trip. But the night I got home, in fact, the day I got home, I put my things away. I ate the takeout I got on the way home and I went to my bed. I literally returned to my Helix because there is nothing like, especially after being separated from it, slipping back into the comfortable, sweet, sweet embrace of my Helix mattress. And I tell you what, I've had this thing for going on maybe 3 years now. Y'all have to do the math on it. And I am still impressed every time I go to bed. And buying a mattress was overwhelming. I didn't know what even to do, how to pick the right one for me. It's a big purchase and you want to make sure you're doing it right. It's stressful. You don't want to make the wrong choice. But taking the Helix sleep quiz made it so easy. I got matched with a mattress based on how I sleep. And I actually, like I said, I can't wait to get back in my bed every day. Delivery was quick and free. And I knew I had 120 nights to try it out. So I had total peace of mind. And then at the end of the 120 nights, if it's like, do you want to send this back? I say, I will defend this Helix mattress's spot in my house to the absolute death. It is probably my favorite piece of furniture. It is one of the best upgrades I have made in my home. And you know what? Helix has won a ton of awards. It's not just me. Go to helixsleep.com/creepy through September 13th for their Labor Day Best of Web sale for 27% off site-wide. That's helixsleep.com/creepy through September 13th for their Labor Day Best of Web sale for 27% off site-wide. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout so they know we sent you. helixsleep.com/creepy. And it ties right into our next story, which is from Paige. And the subject line is Alaskan Bigfoot Encounter.
Uh-oh. Hi.
It's happening. Hi, ladies. First off, love you and love the show. I spent countless hours listening and you got me through some very dark days early in the pandemic when I was a new stay-at-home mom with a new baby with special needs. Oof, weird, tough times. Thank you for all you've done and continue to do. I've been meaning to write in because so many stories on Freaky Friday resonate with me, but I'll start with this one. I know you've been asking for a Bigfoot encounter story for ages. I'm not sure if this qualifies, but you be the judges. To set the scene, I grew up in a small community about 30 minutes outside of Anchorage, Alaska. My parents still live in the same home, and their property backs up to a state park, so there are literally hundreds of square miles of uninhabited forest just outside their back door. A dream, right? My parents' house is small, so to help accommodate guests, they turned a 10x10 shed into an extra bedroom. We call it the cabin. It has power and heat, but no running water or bathroom. Important to the story. The cabin is about 50 feet from the back door of the house, so just running inside to use the bathroom isn't super convenient unless you need to go number two. My mom has graciously put a little camp potty, aka a bucket with a toilet seat, right out there so my sister and I can use it at night when we stay there. Though, if our partners are with us, they usually just step outside to pee. My now husband and I were newly engaged, and we were there visiting my family in the summer of 2016. He's from Florida, and we live in Colorado. I think it must have been one of his first visits there, and definitely his first summertime visit. The almost around-the-clock daylight was really messing with him, and we were both having trouble sleeping, especially because my parents don't believe in window coverings. Like, at all. They say that they live in the woods with no visible neighbors, so there's no need for the extra privacy, right? My dad says that if you need it to be dark when you sleep, just close your eyes. Thanks, Dad. So, at about 2 a.m., we were lying in the small double bed in the cabin with zero window coverings, both tossing and turning. It should also be noted that due to permafrost, buildings in Alaska sometimes shift, and because of that, The cabin's door doesn't exactly latch and lock closed easily or securely. Because it was summer, it wasn't totally dark out, but more of a twilight-level lightness, which can play tricks on your eyes, especially in the woods. My Florida born-and-raised tough guy, at the time he was an active MMA fighter, police officer, and SWAT team member, but I promise he's not one of the douchey ones, got up to go outside to pee. As I laid there, he came bursting back through the door and it slammed shut behind him. Then he immediately barricaded the door with the love seat. What the actual fuck? He started stammering that he heard a roar and that something is out there. I told him it's probably just a bear since we have some large grizzlies that live in the valley, but he was adamant that it wasn't. He told me that while he was standing out there, bearing it all to nature, he heard the most guttural deep roar that pierced him to his core, and as his words made him shrink up inside myself and stop peeing. He said he felt it in his bones, like it had an infrasonic tone to it. He claims that the sound and the way it made him feel harkened back to our primal past when humans were part of the food chain. He spent the next few minutes moving from window to window, looking out to see if he could spot anything. He never did, and we eventually fell asleep. Now, my dad has been known to sneak around in the woods and scare me and my friends by growling and snorting and shaking trees. But I'm hard-pressed to think my dad was just hanging out in the woods at 2 a.m. hoping to scare my brand-new fiancé on the off chance that he came outside to pee. Was it a Sasquatch he heard, or just my dad hazing a new family member? You decide. I hope I painted a picture that made you laugh, because every time I think of my big, tough husband panicking and barricading our door, I have to giggle. So glad I got to see you in Denver for your tour last year, and I hope to see you again soon. Maybe one of these days I'll write in about some of my stories from my 11 years as a sheriff's deputy and SWAT team sniper. They're not as lighthearted as this one, though. P.S. I totally saw you guys at the Brown Palace for the Champagne Cascade in 2022, but I wasn't a Patreon member at the time and didn't know you'd be there. By the time I realized it was you, you had moved on. That sweet, scared, tough husband of mine has gifted me my Patreon membership for Christmas for the last 2 years. Best gift ever. Thank you, Paige.
Okay.
Obsessed okay. with this.
There's so much I love about this because... best case scenario, a Bigfoot was out there and made such contact with this man that he felt his primal instincts kick in.
Yes,
worst case shrunk. Scenario, which is still very funny and great, is that Paige's dad at 2 a.m. like, is out by
I'm gonna get him.
Shed.
I'm gonna get him. He's got to come out sometime. He ain't been out to pee yet.
No, they're just waiting from 50 feet is a long way. That's too far for me to run in the dark out in the Alaskan wilderness. I'll take my chances because not all of us would just be like, it's probably just a bear and be okay with it.
Yeah, not all of us are from Alaska. It's like, yeah, although the Floridian boyfriend, I would imagine you'd be used to, you talk about living in Florida and that there was, alligators and iguanas and frogs falling from the sky.
They had big ass frogs. But I saw gators quite a bit. But I never had one close enough to me to where I felt like something was unlocked within me from my primordial days.
I was reduced back to caveman.
Jesus, yeah. But I love that your dad is like, I'm going to stay out there and scare her and her friends, because that's some hardcore parenting that I'm here for.
Yeah, you got to really
take advantage of the wilderness. You've seen some shit if you got 100 miles of uninhabited Alaskan wilderness behind your house.
You absolutely
with no window coverings.
That's what I'm saying. Here's the thing, Mom and Dad. Yikes. Love you, respect you. I respect your way of life. But what I'm going to say is, yes, certainly, you don't have to worry about somebody looking in and seeing your Ghibli bits. You're worried about a axe murderer standing on the outside waiting, and you can't see him if you don't have, they can see you. They're watching you where you're at in the house. You need to get the jump on them, and that's why you need window shades. That's just my play it for them or don't. It's your mom and dad's choice, but at least in the cabin, because the door doesn't close all the way. You need to know if you're be ready to fight.
Between axe murderers, grizzly bears,
Sasquatch and just the sun being out all the time. I'm going to need some curtains.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to be peeped on by a Sasquatch, but it sounds
But what was it, though?
I think the infrasonic tone to the yell makes me think it was a Sasquatch. I think they're all connected. I got a theory. I'm saving it for the other episode. But there's something to that tone, I think. But the that feeling
like the
that
brown
you get,
noise?
Yeah, like you feel it through. It makes you shit your pants. Is that what the brown noise is?
Yeah, I think
you,
so.
You play it on the flute.
Said it was.
Yeah, it's real. Or that the fish, the hum tone that is either fish fucking or perhaps trumpets in the sky. It's all
fish
connected.
Fucking.
Wasn't that in the Sky Trumpets episode? There was all those fish that were mating and it made this like weird hum sound or it was like their mating call that like made it. I feel like
I don't remember that theory, but I believe you.
Maybe I made it up. But anyway.
No, but it's probably I just don't remember. But
I love the visual.
I don't think it was your dad. So it's either Sasquatch or a grizzly bear. Either way, terrifying.
Very much. Yeah, that 100 miles of uninhabited forest land. Beautiful, but at night, I'm sure chilling. Although, I guess in the summertime, you're like, I can see back there for like half the year. It's fine.
But that twilight, to me, is one of the scariest colors of the day. Like, that's one reason that the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre has always freaked me out so bad is because it's all happening in the day. But then when she escapes, it's kind of like... It's daylight, but it's kind of like getting to where the sun's about to set. And it always freaked me out that this could be going on in the daytime.
That's true.
Like
it does
midsummer. It's the beautiful sunshine and all this horrible stuff's going on. And it just makes it even creepier.
Yeah, it's a freaky juxtaposition. The like, we think the horrible things happen in the shadows, but to have it in broad daylight. And your eyes, I feel like, can really adjust to either like... I mean, not like blinding sun, but like, you know, daytime, regular time, or even in the darkness, your eyes eventually sort of settle. But I always feel like I'm always squinting. I mean, I don't wear my glasses as much as I should, so I am always squinting. But particularly at twilight, you know, it's like I almost, like she said, it plays tricks on your eyes like shadows. Mm-hmm. But even at 2 a.m. twilight, you know if your pee-pee shrinks up in you that some serious shit happened in the woods. So my condolences, sir.
At least if something had come upon you, you could use your MMA skills to maybe take it down. But I don't know. I think if it's willing to like growl, just a warning growl, it's not there to be messed with. No. I feel like you're in its territory. So
yeah, it's like, stop pissing out here.
You got to barricade the door with a love seat. And unfortunately, you can't close the curtains. That's the other thing. So you run inside, you're safe, but you're like, what are we? We got to hide under a bed to get away. Because then it's just like you just see it come around the side and staring through the curtain, the window, and you've got nothing. Just block it out.
Yeah. And then it knows where you are in the cabin. It's going to bust through that door. Well, I'm glad it didn't. I'm glad you all, I made a horror movie in my head on your behalf, and I'm glad that it didn't really happen in real life, but may you hear the call of the Squatch the next time you're up there visiting your folks.
May you, and may you offer it some fish, perhaps, to appease it, or you got to go to Toscano.com and get yourself... A gargoyle. There's different. Apparently, there's a couple different kinds, right?
I think so. I think there's some other poses, but this room's getting full. Let's just say it's getting full.
No,
I got
you
a full
get
size
all of them.
Lucifer head. I got a McGruff right here. It's full back here.
There's a lot happening.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Thank you so much for sending in your Freaky Friday stories. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. Speaking of freaky, if you've got something creepy caught on camera, if you found a weird or unexplainable clip online, or you just have a funny video you want us to see, send it our way and we will live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream, over on Patreon, Sundays at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just enter in your email address. You can watch live with us on Sundays at 8:30 or tune in on Mondays and listen to the replay audio in our main feed. But if you want to see uncut, bigger, longer, and uncut, as we say, go to Patreon and you can watch all the Sunday Scaries on demand. There's over 50 of them now, and it's totally free to watch the whole back archive. So keep an eye out for Sunday, September 27th. That's when we're going to return. We're off for some travel the next 2 weeks, but we will be back Sunday, September 27th at 8:30 p.m. Central, and we hope you will be there joining us as well. If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. If you join for free, you get to see what we're up to next. You can check out all the Sunday Scaries archives. You can check out our monthly throwback bonus content that is available to free members. Or if you join at one of the tiers, you can dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where her honor rules on petty grievances you bring before the court, True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime, Heather Says, where anything I have found late night scrolling can be discussed, as well as Am I the Ass? Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits we feel require our input. The most recent one we released is a relationship advice from Reddit. And, you know, people will go to the internet with certain things and they get the advice they get. And then we give them the advice we give them. So check that out, including a horrible magician who I hope has made himself disappear. But at the very least, you can... Man, I'm just thinking about that guy and what a piece of shit he is. Well, check it out. Relationship advice over on Reddit. We also have a new mini-sode on the Afro Man trial, the defamation trial, as well as a lemon, sweet, sweet lemon pound cake, baby. So check it out over on Patreon. We have a free trial where you join for a week at any of the tiers. Check out all the perks. Listen to the Afro Man mini-sode. Listen to the relationship advice. Binge a bunch of back content and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. But if you stick around, do an annual membership, you get 1 month free and so much all year long, including ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, monthly mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet. And don't forget, our next monthly live Q&A is going to be on Thursday, September 17th at 8:30 p.m. Central. So you can go and register now on Crowdcast, save your spot, and put your questions in. And we cannot wait to answer all your questions. Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And while you're on our website, you can also review the show and submit topics and cases you'd like us to cover. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets to Crime Wave. It's the 2027. If you're not aware, Crime Wave at Sea is the ultimate and only currently true crime festival at sea. And you can hang out with us, with Henry and Ed from Last Podcast Side Stories, with Dan and Lindsay from Scared to Death, with Casey from Case File. Yes, the mysterious Casey will be, I keep saying unmasked. I don't think he wears a mask. I just mean he's anonymous behind the mic, but he will be on stage in conversation with Vicky Petratis, who is an amazing true crime author out of Australia, plus True Crime Garage, True Crime Campfire, Paranormal Chicks, and so many more friends. We cannot wait to hang out with them, everybody, and you. So go to crimewaveatsea.com and use code SINISTER to get $99 off, as well as a meet and greet with us. And you can choose your stateroom and so much more. So go check it out. And we're going to hang out, have a cruise, have a festival, and we're going to yell Hail Satan at the top of our lungs, if I'm sure if Henry and Ed have anything to do with it. Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or maybe you want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now. From happy birthdays to birth announcements to congrats on whatever it is you've accomplished, we would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift. It's a new gift every time. And if you really want, I'll put on the Lucifer head and do a little dance for you. It's called Horsehead Lady Body. And if you put it in the request, we'll know what you mean. So go to cameo.com on a computer website and then /Sinisterhood, and you'll get the best price as opposed to the app. And if you're looking for us on apps like social media apps, you can find Christy on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace, and you can find her on TikTok at Christy or GTFO. I am on all of the places and websites at Heather versus the World. As always, the devil rules the airwaves. Keep it creepy. Sinners.